Oh, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Chatting Between Takes. This episode, season two, I might be wrong. I think I got that right today. Chatting Between Takes, season two, episode three, maybe? I might be wrong. This is a tough start, everybody. I was supposed to podcast this last week. You gave me a lot of questions. I have post-its on my dash with all your questions. So I'm not looking at my phone or anything like that. And my cat passed away. My dear, dear Maddie. And I'm devastated. I'm truly devastated. You know, I have a sort of jocular radio DJ kind of way of speaking no matter what. But it's been a brutal, brutal, brutal week. Her lungs had been filling with fluid over time. And then we drained them and it was just becoming a process where she was starting to suffer. And when 5 out of 5 vets say, yeah, it's time. So I've been a little radio silent and I'm okay with it. And yeah, one thing that I have to work on too as a person is being willing to be vulnerable, not just look at me in success, hence me even doing the podcast today, because I don't feel great. I think something I've fallen into, and sort of my generation and older, is that you only do things that project success or feeling good. And I think there's a little something to that. I think that wallowing can be an issue. I remember there was about a year on Twitter where all Twitter was, this was sort of pre-Donald Trump insanity, was just, look how bad I am at life, ha ha ha. But then like a year later still. And you're like, okay, like, you know, I get in ruts, but I heard this in sobriety once, is that I don't want to furnish the rut and live there. I do have to acknowledge the rut, so I'm not negating truth, but I can't live there. As far as mourning and death goes, I don't know when that stops. I think that just becomes part of the fabric of who you are. And that is what it is. I learned that when my mom passed away a couple years ago. It's like, oh, you're changed now. And if you keep thinking you're going back to a normal, that's not gonna happen. You know, that also can happen in positive ways. I remember when I booked my first TV series, I was so worried that people would think I'd changed. And what I ended up doing was not digging into what the changes could have been, but I had changed, so I couldn't just pretend I was the exact same as I was before anyways. So what I ended up doing was sort of negating so many of the great benefits of the kind of opportunities that success within your career can provide. And so what I try and pass on to people, I'm sure you can relate it to your own career, but within the acting world, if you book series leads and you're being flown around the world to shoot stuff and it doesn't change you, that's the problem. How it changes you gets to be the fun part, where you either become an asshole or not. Have a bit of a theme for today, and then we're going to jump into the questions, because there's tons of questions that you guys sent, most of them on Instagram, some on Facebook. Super appreciate it. Let's make this interactive. If we're going to be Oprah here, and if you're tuning in for the first time, I'm taking down Oprah. All right, we're going to make this podcast the first billion person listener podcast. And then we're definitely in Oprah territory. I'm going to get property next to her in Montecito and be like, what's up, O-Dog? By the way, I knocked the queen off the block, y'all. And she'll be like, why are you talking like that? And if you come for the queen, do not miss, and you haven't got me yet. It's going to be real hard to topple Oprah, but let's do it. Let's do it. Most people don't set goals that are high enough. So, by the way, we hit, I don't know, number 47 in comedy, because this is hilarious so far. This is hilarious. I think I'm the only one who laughs at my own podcasts. But for some reason, I listed it under comedy, because it's hilarious. So there you go. We've done pretty well. We climbed the ranks from like 3,000th from me not posting any for years to, I think, number 47. I don't know how the rankings work, but it means we're doing well. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Give it a share, all that stuff, or maybe listen to the end of this one and then decide if you're going to share it or unsubscribe. Endurance numbness. That's it. See, I got my post-its. I just looked over. Endurance numbness. I was chatting with a mutual friend on the Instagram. Great account, by the way. Brutal Recovery. Check it out. And Lorna posted this awesome quote, and I'm going to mangle it, and I don't remember who posted it, so pardon me. I might put it in the comments. But it's a quote that's going around about, you know, you're at that place where you're not really responding to the texts anymore, and you're not sending out the can't wait to see you after this is all over texts anymore, because we're just in the numb phase. And it's not you, it's all of us. We're hitting a year. Somebody posted, like, what are you wearing to the year anniversary of the 2 weeks to flatten the curve party? We were told it would be 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Now, A, we didn't quite know. B, most people didn't flatten the curve because of anti-science motherfucking assholes. Yes, they are. Yes, you are if you are. Science is real. COVID is real. Over 500,000 deaths in the US. That's the flu. It'll go away. We've turned the corner. Fuck you. I'm looking at the camera trying not to crash. Fuck you if you ever said that. If you ever said it and changed your mind, though, God bless you. We all might be wrong. Only an asshole doubles down once new information lets them know they're wrong. So if you said this was just the flu, but you came around because you actually listened to science and evidence, not fuck you, yay you. And this is something that happens too much, where people's old opinions are brought up and they've changed their mind, but it's somehow brought up as proof. Like Fauci with the mask thing. There was a week where he was trying to have people, we've talked about this, but he said don't wear masks, and that was a huge mistake because assholes who don't understand new info, etc. Whoo, am I in a mood? I'm in a mood because I'm sad, and anger is sorrow's bodyguard. I'll say that again. Anger is sorrow's bodyguard, and I don't feel like weeping all through the podcast, so maybe I'll just get a little ranty and angry today, which seems somehow in opposition to the theme today, which is the endurance numbness, because we just have to keep going. I've never run a marathon, but a lot of my friends have. A lot of my best friends are marathon runners. So therefore, I know all about it. I know about the plight of the marathon runner because some of my best friends are marathon runners. And, you know, mile 20, kilometer 30, you're fucking done. You're done. And you still have 10K to go, 6 miles to go. I've run 10K in my life once, and it sucked. Imagine you've just run 30 and you have 10K to go. So we're all feeling it. So I'm not really sending out the, hey, we should ... when this is over texts the way I was 6 months ago. All of us know who we are, who are gonna find each other for what I call that tertiary friendship. You know, there's my family and best friends. We're all in almost daily contact. And then there's the tertiary crew who I love, but aren't my day-to-day. We all know we're gonna find each other. We're not gonna risk COVID over it today. Could be a park stroll. I've had a couple of those. But generally speaking, it's a lot of effort for like almost more tension. We're a little numb right now. Endurance numbness. If you're feeling it, I love you. I got you. We're all going through it. And I think the big thing, and this is actually why I love that Brutal Recovery account so much, is there's tons of accounts like that. Like, people running meme accounts that basically let us know we're not alone in our insanity. We're not alone in our sense of, I'm fucked up right now. You know, and I tell you, man, Twitter can be a cesspool. Online, Insta not so much, but at the same time, I can feel insecure if I look at Insta on the wrong day and I see so-and-so shooting the part I auditioned for. Most days, that's not a problem. I'm not looking at people's accounts right now. Yeah, a little bit of scrolling, but there's certain accounts I can't look at. And I'll scroll and be like, Sean, take another week. You're too vulnerable. So that feeling of you're not alone. You're not alone if you're just hitting that point of like, really? Is this my fucking life? Even before my cat got, mortally sick in that last couple weeks, I still had February's just not been a great month for me. I had that acting job that I was all excited about. I booked it in early December. So for months, I was making plans around a certain amount of income, type of travel, moving parts. That's one thing we're missing these days, right? Is moving parts. There's so few moving parts, so the doldrums set in. And then when that job went away and with Maddie gone, so this is the first time in over 15, I'd say 16 years, that if I'm home alone, there hasn't been a pet there. It's so eerily quiet. And the thing I was gonna say is that these online things can be a cesspool, but, and again, I'm not the best at being vulnerable publicly, but my God, the number of strangers sending love on Twitter, the number of friends and family on Facebook, and then those awesome mutual blends on Insta, like, it's so appreciated. It's so appreciated because it makes me realize I'm not alone. There's something really special about a pet. If you're a pet owner, you get it. I don't need to tell you. That absolutely innocent, free, pure love. And I think it's reciprocal. Like, I don't love my pet conditionally. My pets destroy my furniture, scratch my carpets, blah, blah, blah. When they have bladder stuff, they pee. Like, dogs, think about how much energy and effort you have to put into them. And if you leave them alone, they eat stuff. I've had dogs as well. And, like, they're fucking the best. They're the best. Man, what do I care about a freaking brown leather softball worked-in couch compared to my awesome couch that is scratched on the arms because of my cats? I'd rather have the cats and a bit of scratch on my couch every time. If you're a pet owner, you know this. You get frustrated when it happens, but who cares? So yeah, there's some doldrums for me right now this February. It is what it is. So I am suffering endurance numbness. I'm really happy about my new Ray-Bans though. These are a basic, okay? So let me know in the comments, what are your basics? Like, for the rest of my life, I'll always just own a pair of black original Wayfarers. I'll always own a pair of Docs, probably cherry. Don't mind if they're black, but 8-hole, faux show. And Birkenstocks, I'll always own Birkenstocks. Us Jits guys all have sandals, but it's not really a Jits thing. It goes back to just, Birks are amazing. So there you go. Jeans, etc. But I don't need a particular type or brand of jean, but always gonna have the Docs, 8-hole, always gonna have the Birks, always gonna have the original Wayfarers. Everything else can kind of come and go, unless I'm forgetting something. And then way too many karate and jiu-jitsu gis in my basement clogging up my laundry room. Ayo! Those are definitely basics. They're just not basics I'm gonna be wearing on the podcast too much. So let's jump into questions. There's so many, and as I always get a little expansive with the answers, I want to give us time for that. So one of the post-its fell down. So let's see, Christo J. Oh, we're starting a wee bit saucy. Well, maybe not. I don't know, Christo J. Christo J. chimed in on Insta. Favorite body part. All right, I'm gonna come at this two ways. First off, when I was younger, I thought yin and yang was about opposites. So I thought, you know, if you were a great public speaker and that was your yin, the yang was that you weren't good at chess. I'm making that up, but you know, there'd be some other thing you were bad at to balance. Now, first off, yeah, that's kind of true. But what I learned over time, especially through my addiction, and then the work I had to do around who I was after that to not just get sober, but stay sober in a way that was worth staying. So I had to like who I was and be able to be with who I was, is the yin and yang is the exact same thing. It's the old saying, two sides of the same coin. The yin and yang, the strength and the weakness, the hard and the soft, all exist on the same thing. So why do I say that? Because my favorite body part is also my least favorite body part, and that is my brain. Oh my God, I love my brain. I love my thoughts. These podcasts end up being about an hour. They could be 10 hours because I enjoy thinking. I enjoy processing. I enjoy breaking down the minutia of stuff and geeking out, and I don't even have to be invested in the thing. You know, if I meet you at a party and you're into something, we'll figure out a way to, you know, cross-chain it. Hey, what's up, Crypto Benzo? We'll talk about that later, or not. Don't want you getting in on my bags, yo. But yeah, we're gonna cross-chain it, so we'll find out where we link and just talk. You know, when people, when you chat and someone's like, oh, I don't know anything about that, I'm like, I'm not talking about, well, even if I was talking about something advanced, it's there, everything can move laterally. And so anybody can talk to anybody else about anything. I love conversation. I love the minutiae. I love solving stuff. However, it's also the least favorite part of my body because my brain is the thing that will wake up on a loop. Okay, so here's a perfect example. When I suffer loss, like a pet dying, I, Sean, have to exist in real time with my feelings at all times. Or else, the fact that I do feel bad, but I'm not leaning into it, my subconscious will show up and go, oh, well, Sean, 46-year-old wise running the show, got his shit together guy, is pretending he doesn't feel sad, but he does feel sad. So like 12-year-old Sean, who's mad about the thing that happened, will show up and go, I got it then. I mean, we need to fill the sad quotient. He ain't doing it, so I got it. Or, you know, somebody who broke up with me will become the subject of ire. A friend who defriended me will become a subject. So now I'm looping. And by the way, let's go down a little rabbit hole here. We got the like snake brain at the back, the amygdala type stuff. And then we got the frontal cortex stuff. They don't fire at the same time. This is why when this gets going, either in an aggressive person or an addict, this don't work so well. We stop thinking and all of a sudden the thing we planned for ourselves goes out the window and vice versa. When we're sitting in this kind of thing, we can avoid all feeling. This is where I tend to go. Ever since the old addiction thing ceased to be a part of my story, which is I'll think my way out of feeling bad. The year I went through a breakup of an 8-year relationship, months after my mom died, all I felt was bad, and sometimes I didn't want to, so I'd get into here. The problem was I'd wake up looping. They said this. I call it cherry picking. I'll take the three real things that happened, but link together a picture that isn't accurate. So the facts are accurate, but the picture's inaccurate. And I think that's something my brain does as a way to avoid feeling bad, and it's not helpful. I'm okay once the release happens, once I start bawling or even yelling. I say anger, sorrow's bodyguard, but my anger's super valid too. I've been having some chats with friends about this. Anger is super valid. Even temper guided properly is super valid. Guided properly. Temper at someone, that gets into what people call toxic. But don't tell me my anger's toxic masculinity, ever. Temper maybe. Anger's a very pure thing. It's God-given, and we need our anger. You come and you grab someone I love and you go to hurt them, you best believe my anger come into play, and you best believe it is God-given and necessary. And I say that not as some righteous, I will fuck you up, dude. That's when we need our anger, to create boundaries and to react to things that are coming at us that shouldn't be coming at us, period. So that's one of those things for me where my brain is both my least and favorite part of myself for all those reasons. But if I'm going physically, my favorite body part, this is a really like, you know, would be my legs, you know, my dancing days. I got good power there. My balance is good. And hey, they look fucking awesome. Have you checked out any of my Speedo pics? Have you checked out my fucking Daniel Craig, James Bond, Sean Connery coming out of the water? Fucking, DeGams is tight, y'all. So thanks for that question. That's where I'm at with that. We're gonna rip down these as we go. Okay, let's see. Squaint from Squaint. What's up, Squaint? How are you? Fave comfy food. This one's so hands down, Domino's pizza. I'll get a medium. I'll get it Hawaiian plus the Brooklyn style pepperoni. And I will get it either in the thin crust that they used to call Brooklyn style, or the thin crunchy. Doesn't really matter. Here's the thing, okay? I've traveled a lot, and I have eaten the, like, you gotta line up, it's the best pizza in Brooklyn. I forget the names. I've eaten the, you know, guy in San Francisco has starter dough that's 150 years old. Or you got in LA the Village Pizzeria or the Damiano's. Does anyone remember Damiano's? These are brilliant, brilliant pizzas. This one place called Domenico's in Paris, right in the right near the Louvre. It's divine with the chili oil. Domino's fucking thin crust or crunchy thin crust is as good. Don't at me or at me. Convince me I'm wrong. But I've eaten a lot of pizza in my life. Anyways, I tend to go to the Domino's for comfy food. You best believe I've eaten a lot of Domino's this week. My lady and I like to treat ourselves with, like, oh, you feeling sad? Great. Let's go buy 32 bags of, like, movie snack pack, like, family size, you know, Reese's Pieces and M&M's with peanut butter and all the shit. And I'm just like, yeah, whatever. I work out all the time. I'm not bikini modeling this week that I know of. So yeah, we're good. We can definitely eat what we want right now. Although, I woke up with my stomach a little off today, partly anxiety about life and sorrow, partly because I've been eating that much chocolate every night and pizza, you know. We're just doing a lot of takeout right now. A lot of takeout. Shout out to Love Chicks in the neighborhood. Also, shout out. Look, I'm all about the shout outs. No affiliations. You need a physiotherapist in Toronto, Jason White. Free plug. The guy's like an Olympic caliber, like went to Pyongyang with the Olympians. He's also, I think, maybe a year older than me. Still swims competitively. Not now, of course, because of COVID. But this is a guy who understands that as an elite athlete, you know, my triathlon buddies or me with my martial arts, we're not going to stop. Like, my ribs fucking torqued up, my shoulders torqued up, my forearms torqued up. And you know, if you're my age, you get this stuff. Your body, you've been cranking it hard since you were 5 years old. And after 40 years, your body's going, okay, cool. So, like, my elbows is pretty sore right now. You want to work with a physio who gets that you're not going to stop and lets you know how to proceed. Anyways, free plug for Jason. Check him out, Jason White. I think he's calling it Momentum now. Why do I say that? Love Chicks on my block is amazing. Lucia on my block. We really have to support each other. You know, small businesses are the backbone of our communities. For real. This sounds public service-y, but it kind of is. Everybody freaks out when a Sneaky D's in Toronto gets turned into condos. When's the last time you went to Sneaky D's? For real. Did you go as, like, I used to go here in the 90s, so I go once every 2 years to remind myself of what bucket hats and fucking rave music was? Or do you go? Because if you like the flavor of something but you don't go there, don't be sad when it becomes a Starbucks. Because if the place had you as a customer and me and all of us who love the flavor, they'd be printing money and they would never shut down and they'd be employing your kids to clean dishes when they're 16 and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's what we want our communities to be. I do shop at the big boxes. I do use Amazon and I don't apologize for it, but I'll always go community first. That's why I'm gonna be doing these community shout outs. I was thinking about it, my physio, who I would now call a friend, friendly physio, we don't hang out outside, Jason, he's starting his new business and he knows it's COVID, he knows it's not a good time, but it's time for him to stake on himself. And I'm like, great, I wanna give you a shout out because you're a human who's doing a thing that's legit real with a level of expertise that I've never seen other than like maybe two other healers in my life. Iris Tance in LA and a guy whose name I will never remember. He was a New Zealander and his hands were this big and he recovered me from a broken arm in a way that, woo, I wish I could even write, that was 20 years ago. I wish I could write the guy a letter and be like, you have no idea how in a world of healing since. Anyways, I could go on and on about amazing people who are local, but the bottom line is support your local communities. Keep paying your gym membership if you can afford to, even if your gym's closed. Good life, maybe, maybe not. That one's your call, but my buddy Adam owns my gym. He's getting my membership fees every month. The gym's not open. Adam needs to stay open, and if Adam can't stay open, I didn't lose money on that. I supported a small business. Do the same if you can. So yeah, my fave comfy food is Domino's Pizza. To you listening on the podcast, I just shot myself in the head because I just literally compromised everything I just said. But doesn't mean I don't like the other pizzas. Now I'm trying to backtrack. Fuck it, Domino's. Okay, Stella Domenico, tell me something about Brazil. Well, Stella.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you? You're going to ask some questions and you want them answered immediately. Good morning. Good morning, Stella. Brazil's one of my favorite countries in the world that I've never been to because of jiu-jitsu, man. When you do the jiu-jitsu, I don't know if I should be doing this accent or not. I love accents. If I ever do an accent and you're offended, let me know. But my God, how could I not imitate Jean-Jacques Machado, one of my favorite people, who I, again, don't know terribly well. I call him my LA jiu-jitsu coach. Because, man, when you're in the room, he's like, when you get the arm bar and you come back, that's the leverage of jiu-jitsu. It's the best, man. You know, the Gracie family, basically. You know, a guy named Maeda came from Japan and then worked with the Gracies. And then the Gracies took the Japanese jiu-jitsu, catch wrestling, shoot wrestling kind of thing. And they created Brazilian jiu-jitsu as we know it. So, you know, BJJ, it's so fundamental to my joy these days. And that's all I can tell you about Brazil. Would love to get there as soon as I can. You know, I get lovely messages when your fans of the TV shows I'm on. And one of the most common messages is wherever you're from, people ask, do you ever want to come here? And the answer is just yes. I want to go everywhere. Traveling is the best thing. You know, somebody was saying something like you have to have fitness and you have to have work and then you have to have a life. And, you know, in the endurance numbness we're all suffering, all of it becomes one thing. And part of me is like, what is my life? And I was like, well, when you don't have a pandemic, you travel. You go, you know, race your car and like hobbies that basically, like traveling's a hobby. So, and I think about hobbies as things you love doing where there's no real expectation of return. Like, if your hobby is toy trains, sure, there's some toy train guys who ended up with trains that went up in value. Oh, I'm gonna pause that for a phone call. Okay, we're back, my friends. Took a phone call from my karate teacher. You know, funny thing, we ended up talking about a lot of the same stuff. The numbness, endurance, the putting one foot in front of the other, a lot of the peripherals kind of going away, and a lot of the things that matter mattering more. It's going around, it's in the zeitgeist. I'm not sure what I was chatting about, but let's pretend we answered the last question and get on to the next one. So this one I'm really excited about. I wanna give it some time. This is from Megan. Hi, Megan. And she basically just asked, when do you feel you started living your life? And then she DM'd me a little more detail that, you know, a lot of people in their late 20s are working jobs that aren't the job. And, living a life that maybe isn't the life you picture for yourself or want for yourself. So there's a reason I want to get to this before some of the other questions, because this one needs some time. This to me is an ongoing journey. Oh, and she said very nice things, like it seems like I have a vibrancy and an energy around my life. 100% I do. None of that is false or made up. The thing is that I'm not sure how much of any of this is chosen. I'm gonna get a little philosophical on this, but I didn't create my drive. And sometimes when people don't have as much of a drive, and other people are like, well, all you gotta do is this, and make a list, and find that passion. It's like, that's the fucking thing. You know, Oprah, who we're toppling, always says, you know, find your passion. Find the thing you're best at in this world. Find the thing you're meant to do, and then do it fully. And so many people struggle is, what is that thing? And the reason I say all that, Megan, is because I went to university for biochemistry. I was in high school as much into the arts as you all see now on my social stuff, but also equally into physics and chemistry and biology, and I loved it, like loved it. Math, woo, forget it. Shout out to Mr. Eccles, especially. The whole math faculty at John F. Ross was amazing, but especially Mr. Eccles. He really loved first principles and why math is what it is. It was lovely working with him. And then I went off to university and dug in to a biochem degree. Now, at night, I was doing plays and dancing and doing my martial arts. And then in the day, I was doing that. Now, one day, and the word I like to use is dread, I'm descending the stairs to the chem lab in the chem building at Western. And for the first time in my life, I feel a little thing known as dread. Dread's different from I'm tired, I don't feel like doing it. Dread is, I can't fucking imagine doing this for one more day. And all I can think about is, I don't know if it was karate class or dance class that night or what it was, a play, but I wanted that. Now that day I didn't leave biochem, but soon after I did, I turned a 4-year degree into a 3-year degree and left. So that was very much an intuitive voice. And I'll tell the story quickly. I was watching Combeferre at Stratford do Cyrano de Bergerac. I've told this story a million times. And he was so brilliant. I was weeping at the gorgeousness of his performance. But all the guys on stage with him, I already thought as a university players club actor that I was better than them. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't, it doesn't matter. But I went, I can do that. I don't have to just move to Hollywood or become Gene Kelly. I can just like go to Stratford and be an actor. That's the day. Like, phoned my folks that night, partly because my mom was helping me with my German, because I was going to go do a European exchange program in Heidelberg. I was already accepted, and I was going to do my 4th year in biochem, and then the 4th year in German with extra courses to be up on my German would have needed probably a 5th year. There was some dread when I realized I wanted to do this thing, and I was like, oh my God, I've got 2.5 more years, because I was halfway through my 3rd year. Anyways, I went, my folks were super supportive. I just said, Mom, I'm out, Dad, I'm out. They were great. Talked to my counselor at university, and got some pressure to stay in chem from the dean, who was like, no, you've got great marks. You can't leave. He was sort of being charmingly like, I got your back, kid. And I was like, no. And he goes, well, what's going on? And I explained to him. And he looked at me after. Dr. King was his name, and I'll never forget it. He just kind of went, oh, yeah, you really do have to go. I'm going to turn this course into a stats course, and you'll get your 3-year degree. What? Good for him. You know, he didn't create any doubt or pressure. Anyways, I've never not since then had the drive. Now, acting has been one of the toughest things in my life because I was failing at theater school at it, so I dropped out. Didn't book a camera part for, I think, 3.5-4 years. When I basically wrecked my career through the booze and drugs, barely worked for 5 years. Couldn't get arrested. For 3 of those, I was sober. So the point is that this wasn't easy, but I had the internal guidance of that intuitive pinch. Many times I wished I could not be an artist, including fucking this month. Like, God, it'd be nice to just have a normal job that pays a normal salary, but I don't know what normal is. My friend does focus group research, and he doesn't get to go home at 5 p.m. and be done. My brother's a corporate lawyer. He's not just done. I don't know anyone who has a normal job. So maybe that's helpful, Megan. Like, nobody I know has all of it, because every job entails far more than people think. Now, in terms of life, this is another one where I don't take much credit. Like, when I was 18, I was already engaged on a Zen journey. That's where the martial arts was, but there's a reason I chose the martial arts. A journey of consciousness of self. That's all this shit's about for me, is the experiment of self. And as I move through the world that way, when I remember to, choices get easy. Does it align with the path? Or is it off the path? Even if I don't know what the path is, I know that the peak of that mountain, we'll call it enlightenment, is the goal. I don't think of enlightenment the same way I did when I was 18, which is this Buddhist never feeling sorrow or pain. That for me is That's more about avoidance. For me, the enlightenment now becomes about the being present through each moment of my life, good or bad, i.e. leaning into the sorrow and the joy. So this is a bit of a rambling answer, Megan, because at age 18, I knew I was on a Zen path. By the way, so much of my choice toward drugs was a positive. If you're listening and you're struggling with sobriety, please don't take that as a fucking suggestion to go keep doing drugs. But my desire for consciousness, David Bowie and me are a bit aligned on this. I don't know if he ever got sober or not. It's not my business. But the journey was really part of the journey toward what I thought was self. And then you realize it's not. It's the furthest thing from self. And then if you're like me, you can't do anything about it for a while till you get help. But the actual choice to take that journey was very much. So at 18, I kind of knew there was this thing in me. And that I would call the vibrance you're picking up on. And that would be true whether I moved into being a therapist or just end up directing and not acting anymore or, you know, who knows what. So it's not as much about the path, but subsequently I did find the career path. But if you told me there was something I could do that was as lucrative and provided me the freedom as acting, I don't know. I don't identify as an actor anymore. I do act as a living, and I love it. But I don't identify with it in a super strong way. And I think part of that's maturity, and part of that is self-preservation, i.e. maturity, which is, you know, actor, 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 actor. Well, what about those months where you're not acting? Because, you know, I'm a very successful actor who might not act every month or even for 3 months. But what does that mean then? Does that mean I don't exist? And there's a great way, and for the people listening, I'm showing my hand. The center of the hand is you, and then the tips of your fingers and thumb and all that, those are also you, and we'll call those the things you do. Now, what I used to do is only define myself by the things I did, so there was no center. And as I'm jumping from right now, I'm waving my index finger, which we'll call, you know, the karate guy, over to the middle finger, which we'll call the lover. And believe me, that guy deserves the middle finger for a lot of what he called being a lover. Hey-o, Casanova. But in any case, as I'm trying to go from here to here, the chasm in between is, you can crash and fall as you're jumping from these versions of self that are external. But the center is the real you, and that person can move fluidly out to the end of one digit and back to self. And then eventually, I'm going to take the metaphor a little further, just imagine it as a mitt. You don't even have to really travel. It's just all happening all the time. And that for me is the real Zen, the real enlightenment, when all the things I am are always true. I remember at my brother's wedding, I'm sure I've told this story in the podcast. I might have even told it on the last one. I have no mind. Look, kids, this is your brain on sorrow. The speeches at my brother's wedding all describe the same guy. Every person, whether they were from his Coast Guard or from his work or from his university or his track team, they all described the same guy. And I just sat there, I think I was 26 at the time, going, holy shit. My greatest fear would be all the people from the different fingertips of my life describing me, and all the other ones would be like, what? No, that's not Sean. Because I was shady and moving around, presenting different aspects of myself to different people. So the real enlightenment is when I'm all things at once, that I am in all directions. There's a great quote, right? It's sort of a Zen idea. Behave alone as though you have company, and behave when you have company as though you're alone. Then don't Dove Charney that shit and pull your dick out in front of your fucking secretary and jerk off in front of her because you're running a successful company and think that gives you rights that you don't have, you know. Don't do that. But fundamentally, we understand what that idea means, is that those aspects of yourself that's why I love this current ethos, zeitgeist of vulnerability. Yeah, don't be so bad at life 1 year and still bad at all the same things a year later. I believe that. But use the truth of being in that rut or bad at things to to see where you need to focus. Like, what's your weakness? Give that time and energy so that it's no longer your weakness, and then a year later have a new weakness, make a new mistake. So Megan, really my question is for you. What do you want? Who do you want to be? And here's the real kicker, and this is the hard one. Are you willing to walk away from things in your life that aren't that? Until that's true for us, we won't get what we fully want, even if we don't know what it is. When I was 24, I'd never worked a day on TV in my life. Commercials, yes, TV, no, or film. And I was catering and I was waitering and making good money at both of them, and I quit both jobs before I had any reason to. I had no other job. But I said to myself, whatever you spend most of your day doing is what you are, and right now, Sean, you're a waiter. Now, waiters are great. But I wasn't a waiter in my mind, I was an actor in my mind. So I then went into $13,000 worth of credit debt, but then I booked a series lead. I don't know what to do with that information for anyone else, because I really don't recommend getting into credit debt of $13,000 when you don't have a job. But then I went and booked a series lead that paid 10 times that. I don't know if those relate. I have no idea. I wish I did. But my real question for you or for myself is, can I walk away from the things I don't want that are happening to create space, including sorrow, frustration, fuck this-ness? Because, you know, everything happens for a reason is a great quote. A, that I don't agree with. B, it makes it sound like my French job went away, right? I was planning to go. I would be in quarantine right now, having just gotten back from France. We know this if you've been listening. So that went away because of lockdowns in France. So everything happens for a reason would suggest that I lost that job for a reason. I don't believe that. What I do believe is I'll take the time, including the fuck that, God, my career sucks sometimes, and I'll hopefully apply that, maybe not even within the time period. Oh, well, I didn't get that this month, but this showed up. Nah, probably not. We'll never know. I just think that's ego. But I do think I can take the frustration and go, I'm gonna go work harder on my script now. Why? Because I have the space for it. Now, in this case, life's rejection is God's protection. Who knows? Maybe I would have got COVID in France. Or not. Who knows? We don't know. I don't know what's best for me. But I can often know what's not best for me. That's really what I'm getting at. So my question is, in terms of our endurance numbness theme, are you enduring anything you know you shouldn't right now? I don't know you well. We've met. You're delightful. I'm guessing there is something that you know ain't in. Probably a couple things. So are you willing to walk from those? Or if there aren't that you're conscious of, are you willing to sit alone quietly with no music and no nothing and identify them? That might be a cool thing, because that helps me. Do I live my life fully? Abso-fucking-lutely. Absolutely. You know, that's one thing. I think the other thing is I'm really willing to make mistakes. You know, I've motorbiked across countries and ended up motorcycling through blizzards. That's fucking stupid, but God, what a trip. You know, I've raced cars and dinged them, and I've obviously taken the trips with my own body where I dinged the shit out of them, and then you come back stronger if you come back. Big mistakes, big swings. I've always been a big swing guy. Who knows? Maybe it's a good thing, maybe it isn't. I got a full face helmet for my mountain biking so that as I'm wearing this GoPro in the spring, you guys will catch me trying some big jumps. They probably won't be that big to you. They'll be big to me when I'm in the air going, woo! So I got the full face to protect myself if I crash. What that tells me is that I'm very willing to bike in a way that I will crash. I remember feeling this a couple years snowboarding. And wiping out a bunch and just laughing on the lift. And I was with my friend Jess Salguero, who's gonna be a guest on the show soon. That got delayed because of what was going on, otherwise we'd already have posted one. But she goes, what are you laughing at so much? I was like, I just never wanna be a guy who's unwilling to try a new thing that includes wiping out. You know, I'm an okay snowboarder, I'm not great, but I got good by being willing to wipe out in my 40s at something brand new. I didn't choose this vitality / idiocy, but I do like it about myself a lot. Even when I wake up looping on all the self-piteous things I've ever done, because I do that a lot. Me and self-pity. Oh, can I like put the drill in and pull out that core? That'd be nice, the self-pity one. It's part of my journey right now. There's some aspect of me that has some regret. Well, it's okay, so it's interesting because remorse and regret, somebody brought this up to me the other day as being different. Remorse is for things you've done. Regret is for things you haven't done. I looked this up. It's kind of accurate, a kind of appropriate way to think about it. In that sense, I have no regrets. Like, laughingly, have no regrets. Oh my God. Done the sex stuff, done the drug stuff, done the amazing, been on the Champs-Élysées for the premiere of the film I'm, supporting lead in as I'm driving, you know, doing the thing. All the motorbike stuff, all the car stuff, all the friendship stuff, the martial arts, there's a fullness to it all. Whew. But remorse, it's ironic that my remorse comes from wanting to live a life with no regrets. But I'm okay with it. All right, moving on. B Woods, you. How's it going? Always appreciate your comments. Don't always get back to them, but I see them. What attracts me to people, either friends or lovers? That's awesome. I mean, look, first and foremost is what I said, brain. It doesn't have to be smart. It's not like a high school version of your brain. You're smart, therefore you're good. It's processing. How do you see things, feel things, think about things? That's what's going to keep us friends over time. All my friends and I, and this includes my lovers, we have what I call the ongoing conversation. We start and it ends when one of us dies. And some of those conversations are yearly, monthly, more intermittent, less intermittent. But if you're a friend of mine, we have the ongoing conversation happening. For me, that's sort of the difference between friend or acquaintance. Acquaintance is someone where you know each other, you appreciate each other, but there's no ongoing thing. And I actually tend more to the ongoing than others. Once the ongoing starts, I'm just in it. And I notice a lot of people, you know, they double tap, they give it the heart, and they move on. And I'm like, cool, that person's not up for the ongoing. And I kind of always am. Once it starts, I'm not always wanting to engage that way. But once engaged that way, there's little you could do other than be a racist, misogynist asshole to end that, because why the fuck not? That's half the fun of this thing through life. I kind of got that at summer camp. Me and my summer camp friends were just friends for life. Like, for life. And we just pick up where we left off. And, it's awesome. So that, the thinking, the processing, the conversational vibes, those are what attract me to a person. And in terms of a lover, look, it's all pheromones. It's all like when we get near each other, woo, does that thing happen? I've talked about this. That's why online is such a degradation of true interaction. Online is porn, man. Now you can meet in person and get lucky, and that porn star in you who you've swiped on have a pheromonal connection, but you know, you're choosing a fantasy. That's why I call it porn. Whereas at the bar in the 90s, in the early 2000s, you're pheromonal. You're meeting by chance. And three people walk by you and one of them makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. That is life. Oh, that is life. That's life not just for romance, although that's such an obvious example. That's life for anything. Anything. We need to de-intellectualize everything. And you're talking to a guy who spent his young life intellectualizing everything. Other than the fact that science is real and math is real, and you're a dumb fuck if you don't understand that your opinion and science aren't the same thing when it comes to how we should process things like pandemics. Your opinion matters in terms of how a committee should be steered. You know, that kind of thing. But hey, even then, depending on what the thrust of the committee is. Anyways, for a guy who believes all that, like that's a fundament, is that we at the same time need to de-intellectualize it all. We need to just go, man, Aziz Ansari does this, right? We Google what's the best toothbrush. What toothbrush do you like? What bristles feel good on your gums? When you hold a guitar in the store, you can Google best guitar. Which one's neck feels good in your hand? Which one sounds good? And if you don't know, buy the cheapest one that qualifies, and then from that point, you'll start to understand what you need. You don't need to customize your bike before you've ridden your bike. De-intellectualize it. De-intellectualize it. Appreciate that question. Sally singing, best car ever owned or driven. I love this question. Okay. Driven. God, that's hard. You know, I'm going to say the best car I've driven was a 1977 934 Clone, which is a Porsche Turbo race car. And the guy didn't have one of the originals. They're million-dollar plus cars. But he had cloned a car like it. And I was instructing, I was teaching at the Streets of Willow people how to drive their cars. And so I was driving his car for a number of laps. I don't know if that's the best car I've ever driven, but that's the most fun I've ever had driving a car. You know, those four-speed turbos, you really got to keep them on boost, which means above a certain number of RPMs, and just hooning that motherfucker around. And hooning isn't even the right word, because those back fat tires, you know, breaking them loose was not really something you wanted to do with that turbo power. So I'm going to say that one. Also, the Lotus Elise, a guy named Bill Ryan, who ran WISAC out in Vancouver, just shot me the keys to the Elise. He took me around, then he let me take it around. It's so light and tactile, beautiful, beautiful thing that I've owned. It's three cars. Flip a coin between my 1985 Porsche 911 or the 1986 I had. The 86 had some pluses. It was a coupe, it was a little stiffer. The 1986 has a slightly lower seat, which I like, but my 85 is the Targa, which is a little less rigid of a body, but the top removes, it's beautiful for sunny days, and the thing's fucking perfect. I've set that car up just right. So now that I think about it, the Targa, my current Porsche, is that, but also this fucking Hyundai. This Hyundai Tucson I'm driving. Some of you have heard this story. I went to buy a Porsche, fucking can't even remember the name of it. I've already moved on from it. Whatever the smaller SUV is. Did I mention I have no mind? And then I went and drove this Hyundai Tucson right after. And it was 80% as good, maybe 90% as good. It doesn't have the paddle shifters. That would be nice. Other than that, for what I need an SUV to do, this thing is genius. It's just as quick. I love this thing. This Hyundai Tucson is one of the best things I've ever owned for very different reasons, right? My Porsche doesn't have a stereo, doesn't have air conditioning. It's like fully visceral, doesn't have power steering. It is analog. And it's fast and it's light and loose and you fuck with it and it fucks with you. This thing's just like, does everything you need right. So hugely recommend it. By the way, if you count a car I had with an ex-girlfriend, Lacey, who, by the way, highly recommended the Porsche. Wow. Anyways, doesn't matter. I was just going to say Tiguan, but that's the VW, but I think they share a platform. Anyways, Lacey had the first Hyundai in my life, an old Santa Fe. Then I had an accent, then I had this. They're just, I'm a fan of the company, no affiliation. Okay, I'm not going to be able to Anwara Lotibe. It's all one word, so I'm not sure. It's probably Anwar. Hi, Anwar. Am I gay and will I sleep with you? Okay, so I've answered this before on my Insta. I don't identify my sexuality, but I don't have to. Because nobody's ever, they're not gonna like, I don't know, shoot me in the woods or barbed wire me to a fence. And I don't say that to be a dick. Because I'm conventionally straight. But I don't identify, I've made out with guys, I've made out with trans women. It didn't do much for me, but I'm open to it. So I'd be like spiritually pan or bisexual. But in action, if you look at my history, the hairs go up on the back of my neck with the ladies. So that's it. Would I sleep with you? No, I'm in a monogamous, committed, amazing relationship. the wonderful woman named Anais. And were I single? It's not impossible. You in particular? I don't know. Probably not. The chances of us meeting or whatever. You as a guy? I think you're a guy. It's not impossible. I'm open to it till the day I die. I don't know why I would ever close that door. That's why I don't identify. If somebody brushed by me, I don't care how they identify. I don't care who they are. If it does the thing, then I'll do the thing with them. Whew! And again, like, I'm open. I'm not only open to that, I kind of wish that would happen. Like, it just doesn't. It's why I don't think we choose our sexuality. I know we don't. We all know we don't. Only assholes are like, you should. Oh my God, there was this amazing Twitter thread. I won't be able to find it to do it justice. But it was a lot of people coming out as trans. And literally they'd be like, by the way, I told my dad I was trans, and he just yelled, God damn it, I wanted to be a woman when I was your age too, but I just pretended I was a guy until it went away. And it was so awesome because it was so many stories like that of people from that generation. It's actually not awesome, it's the worst. Who were openly acknowledging that they were either trans or didn't want to identify as the sex they were assigned. But they were in a culture where they just had to jam it down, so you should too. It's like those people who don't want debt forgiveness. I paid my debt, you should owe 50 grand for college. You know, it's like, do you think I want anyone to go through what I went through with addiction or losing my career? Well, I lost it, so you should have to too. No! If I could wave a wand and there'd never be another person who has to suffer addiction, that'd be great. It's fucking awful, and it's not just awful for me. What about my friends and family who had to put up with my shit? Oh, God, the homes that are broken over that. And think of the homes that are broken over people's cultural need to be so entrenched in not only their sexuality, but people they'll never meet sexuality and identity and gender. Fuck that. Open to it all. Always will be. Lauren Girl Wonder, how's it going? I don't have it all written out because it's post-its, but I think it was something along the lines of, like, in an ideal world, would you be doing stage or do you just want to focus on TV film? If you didn't ask the ideal world question, I've added it for a reason. In an ideal world, stage wouldn't get so woefully underpaid, but I understand it. You fill a theater. The type of theater I most like is indie, sort of middle house, you'd call it. Like, well, 80 to 300 seat theater. I find that's where the most interesting writing happens. So that to me is impossible to make the kind of living I'll make shooting one. I can shoot one day of television and make more than I can make for a whole run of a play. And I really like a good life, and I like money, and I like what money provides. I always have, by the way. It's not just a aging to a stage in life thing. It's a, I like that shit. I wish that weren't the case. So in an ideal world, they'd pay the same. Now, here's the thing. I was in Toronto working for a company called Soul Pepper. Now, we hadn't started rehearsing our plays. We were about 6 weeks out. And I'd only done theater in Toronto at that point. I think I'd done 10 or 12 main stage productions. Theater was going well for Sean, for me, for Sean Benson, for Benzo, for the Bender, for the Benz. I eat. Those are all the ways I like to refer to myself in the third person. In about 6 weeks, we're going to start rehearsing this play. We've done what's called young company work, and I book a lead in a TV series. A lead, like lead role. One of five. Incredible group of actors, incredible show, young law series called The Associates. What a gift. I call the theater director, Albert Schultz is his name. He's, if you Google Albert Schultz, he's fallen on hard times through ill repute, through his own behaviors. That night, he yelled at me for a good half hour, if not longer, for dropping out of the show, saying that theater was noble, I was going to waste my best years on crap TV, ask him how he knew he'd done a show called Street Legal, etc., etc. I won't get into the whole Albert Schultz thing other than to say the reason we know who Albert is because of Street Legal. He was great on it, by the way. And he, interestingly, had dropped out of a Robin Phillips production to do The Law Show. So he had an axe to grind with himself that he took out on me, but it stuck with me. I really felt like I'd walked away from this noble, real thing into this world of TV film, in which I ended up, you know, exploring all the nether worlds and blah, blah, blah. Real journey, real tough journey that ended up blooming into a great life. What's the point of all that? I always had this little voice in the back of my head, and our theater school teachers always told us it was noble too. Did I fuck up? Should I have stuck with the theater? Blah, blah, blah. Years later, a film I directed called Barn Wedding, in which I played a character named Derek, who was a bit of a jagoff, a sort of lovable douchebag. Kat Sandler, my favorite playwright, comes up to me after, introduces herself, and I'd already seen a play of hers that interestingly had starred Kelly McCormick, one of the stars of Barn Wedding and co-producers and writer. Kelly's a powerhouse, amazing talent. I was like, oh, I know you, Kat. You're awesome. And she goes, great, I have this play called Liver. Will you do it? You know, and I met and read it with her and got cast. And I went and worked on this play and did the play. Now, the play was a smash hit, sold out every night, extended week. The reviews were amazing. The reviews for me were amazing. You couldn't ask for more, truly. It was not better than a great run on a TV show. Equally good. But it was a beautiful thing for me, because what it did was it removed the quotes around theater. I will tell you this, though. Like, I think of Katie McCullough, who I'd always known through one of my best friends and also my ex-girlfriend, one of my exes. Katie and I had always known each other, but we fucking got to know each other, independent, you know, everybody on that play. You do get to bond with your cast in a play in a different way. So it might be a slightly more special experience in certain areas. But then I think of the Tiny Pretty Things cast. We're fucking bonded. Whew. That's one of the tightest, best casts I've ever been involved in. And that's a Netflix TV show with a bunch of young, hot stars who get their social media blowing up and could be motherfuckers, and not one of them is. So even the familial aspect on TV is there. Anyways, do I want to do more plays? 100%. Sometimes it is tough for me to decide to, because of the opportunity of a certain type of acting work I want to do. When I was talking to Kat Sandler about that play, and it was funny, because of the Albert Schultz experience, I had a really deep, honest combo with Kat. And I said, Kat, I just need to let you know that I'm up for a film right now. And if I book it, I will take it. When can I drop out of your show by without betraying you? Because it's a possibility. And we had a convo and we set a date. She was even too generous with the date. I literally negotiated the other way. And I didn't end up getting the film, which I'm happy about, because at the time, the money and the stuff seemed like it'd be a good idea. In retrospect, Liver's one of the best things I've done in my life artistically. I could go on and on about it. But yeah, if somebody offers me a play tomorrow, I'll have the exact same conversation with them. But at a certain point, I don't know. What does it matter? You know, I love my movies of the week. I have one coming out in 2.5 weeks. I'm so fucking excited for you all to see it. It was a beautiful fucking role. Intense, awful role, for all the right reasons. And I did a type of work I've never done before. And to be honest, leaned into an age of character I've never been willing to lean in before. Certain things, it's gonna be an interesting one for me to watch. Might be a tough one to watch. I might not be as good as I think. Maybe I'll be better, but I also am gonna look older than I think I look. C'est la vie, that ain't ever gonna stop. And so I'm really glad that I did that instead of a play, blah, blah, blah. I could go on and on about this. It's such a wonderful topic. But if any young artists are listening, follow your guts. Follow your guts. I'm not saying any of this would have happened. But when Susan Coyne, Albert's partner, no longer, created a show called Slings and Arrows, an incredible actor named Luke Kirby played in that. There's a good chance, had I stuck out Soulpepper, I might have been that guy. You know, and then you're shooting with Rachel McAdams and you get to, you know, Luke's incredible and deserves all his success. If I was the Soulpepper darling, maybe that would have been my first TV show after years of theater. I don't lose sleep over that one. That's not a regret. I made an amazing choice for myself. But, you know, if you're a young artist, you couldn't have made a wrong decision in my place. I don't believe you could have made a wrong decision in your place. It's hard to know, though, right? I mean, think about the actors who didn't book Friends, but were real close. Like, I don't know. Some of them, I know who they are. Like, they've gone on to really good careers. And some of them probably became fucking drunks on the end of the bar stool going, I was this close to being Chandler. And probably were, you know? So sometimes, let's say I don't do that first Law series. Maybe I never get to do all this awesome TV film work and have this life. I don't know. Maybe that would have been a better life. I might be wrong. This path might have been the wrong one. I might be looking at a sliding doors path where I chose to pursue biophysics. And I ended up, you know, marrying my lab partner. And we have a family and I'm just way happier. It's possible. I doubt it. I think we're the through line and our spirit's the through line. But it's possible. Because if I think this is my best life, I might be wrong. But I can't dash myself on the rocks of, my self-pity doesn't go there. My self-pity's that remorse over things I've done that might have led me down the wrong path. If anything, I think there probably is a better life out there that I could be living if I hadn't fucked so many things up. That's where I try not to go at 3 a.m. when I wake up too often. Anyways, you guys are all the best. These questions have made for a really bubbly podcast, I hope. Let's keep climbing the comedy ranks because this is hilarious. And I'm going to go do a little distancing karate with the head instructor of my club. That's what this drive's been about. I've not stopped teaching my karate classes since COVID started. In a park, 10 people max until the recent lockdown, 5 people max. We're training in toques, which are beanie caps for you non-Canadians, and boots in a foot of snow, punch and kick in 2 nights a week. I'm not pitching my class. I'm just saying where there's a will, there's a way. I haven't lost students. I've actually gained students during the pandemic because they're like, shit, I'm outdoors in a park under the moonlight while snowflakes are falling, doing something awesome with deep roots going back hundreds, if not thousands of years. And I'm near other people in 3 dimensions, but in a safe way that's viable through all standards. Woo! It's too good to pass up. So I'm gonna go do the same with my teacher. Make sure your teachers have teachers, my friends. Anybody who's answered all the questions for themselves? Okay, you guys are the best. We'll see you for the next Chatting Between Takes. And when I say guys, I mean people. Y'all, folks, ladies, non-defined genders. I love you all. There's no room for exclusion, even if I do it unconsciously. Mwah! Don't touch your face.